T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
What a week we got. What an incredible week of headlines that will materialize come Thursday with the NBA trade deadline, and what the Warriors' future looks like is fascinating. How they go about securing their future will be fascinating. What happens at 7-14 as either picks or a trade, it's all fascinating. And to talk about it is a man that understands an awful lot of the prospects that we are trying to get to know, and when it comes to an international flair, there is nobody better than Fran Fraschilla. He is nice enough to join us here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Fran, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you, sir?
Damon, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. I'm out here, and I'm not in Tokyo. I've tried to con people. I'm in Stamford, Connecticut, and we're doing the Olympics, and we better not lose tonight.
Say hello to our friend Kate Scott for us.
Kate's been great. We've had a great time so far. They are working her to the bone. She's doing both men and women overnight games. So she is right now. She is probably in the middle of a deep sleep, but she's been fabulous to work with.
Absolutely, your hours have to be all upside down. So I don't know if we got you up from a nap right now, but Fran, thank you very much for joining us. You certainly sound spry and ready to go. So let's just hop right in to, before we talk about what the Warriors should do, can you give us a little thumbnail sketch of what you think they are right now with the return of Klay Thompson, with James Wiseman showing up as a, you know, physically gifted prospect, but the basketball fit was not easy to see right away? What do you think of the situation the Warriors find themselves in before they even make a decision on Thursday?
Well, I think they're caught between, obviously, three potential Hall of Famers, probably two, maybe all three, in the seventh, eighth innings of their career. And now I think the decision for Bobby Myers and the Warriors is, do we add veterans to this group to make one good run, one or two runs at the Western Conference title, and then hopefully an NBA Finals, or do you take the best young player available in this draft? There's a couple of really good ones that I think would fit for them. But I think this is a Rubik's Cube. When you have Andrew Wiggins on the block, when you have potentially James Wiseman on the block, when you have a 7th pick and a 14th pick, what I think the Warriors are doing right now is they are weighing every potential opportunity to make this team better this year, because of the window that's open. And I think you have to explore the idea of getting a veteran player. I think we all know that. And yet, it takes two to tango. So on draft night, they've got to be ready in the event they can't pull off the deal they want to pull off. They got to be ready to, you know, make a pick at 7 and potentially make a pick at 14 as well.
Is there an internal logic for most teams to cut off all phone calls, like, you know, up to like an hour before the draft, just be able to clear your head and go, okay, we've got all the offers we're going to get? Or do you keep fielding calls all the way through the first 6 picks because somebody might be holding out and then dangle the magic piece, you know, 2 minutes before it's your turn?
Yeah, Ray, it's a relationship business, as most are. And I guarantee you they're going to be on the phone, if not just trying to make deals. They will definitely be on the phone trying to figure out who's thinking what. But no, my experience with people, my friends in the league, is that those phones are ringing off the hook. They're calling their people on various teams and trying to get the lay of the land, but they're also trying to make deals. That's just the way that works. And quite frankly, to your point, they may not get a deal done until the draft has already started. But I guarantee you, this started months ago. This started at the end of the season when they started to do their due diligence about free agency. See, you know, the thing that people don't realize about the NBA is the draft's important, but very few of these draft picks are going to make an immediate impact. Most of these guys are going to losing teams, and the team is going to be a losing team next year. Where the real rubber hit meets the road is August 2nd when free agency starts. And while the Warriors aren't in a position to do much in that area, all of this kind of fits together like a Rubik's Cube. So they're wheeling and dealing right now as far as the phones are going and trying to see if Bradley Beal can be pried. Do they want Siakam? A lot of people don't think they really are that interested in him. So they're just trying to figure out what's going on out there because they have to put this puzzle together going into next season.
Let's assume for argument purposes right now that they're unable to make one of the sort of blockbuster trades we're talking about.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things that I think has happened over the course of the last month is a guy who was viewed for a long time as a consensus top five guy in Jonathan Kuminga seems to be slipping to a point where he might be available to the Warriors. Now, I know he's seen as raw, so maybe not helping as immediately as they would like, but what can you tell us about why you think he's fallen and what kind of player you think he'll be?
Well, you know what's interesting? I haven't talked to any NBA personnel guy who thinks he's falling. The only people think that guys are falling or rising are the guys that didn't know in the first place. You know, like I'm not a big believer in guys rising. You just figured out that he was good enough to be in the spot you put him at the end of your mock draft, because back in January, you had this guy, you didn't even have him in the first round.
Right.
So I don't buy any of the rising, falling stuff. I know there are teams in the top five that still think that this kid has the potential to be the best player in the draft. Now, I don't personally think he will be, but if he's there at seven, the dilemma for the Warriors is much like with Wiseman, is 2 to 3 to 4 years from now, you might have a very, very good player who at this point is raw. But I would be surprised if he's still there at seven. And I think if in the Warriors' case, what they've got to do as best they can, if they can't make deals, is find a guy or at seven or at 14 that they believe can help them now, but also has some potential to be a good player down the road when, you know, the big three are on their last legs, which is probably, you know, 2 to 3 years from now.
Talking drafts, talking prospects with Fran Fraschilla here on 95.7 The Game. When all of the what the Warriors might do at seven conversations started, Davion Mitchell was the clubhouse leader of the conversation. It seems almost that Moses Moody has worked his way into the clubhouse leader of possibilities. Can you give us a little report on both Davion Mitchell and why we should see him for the player that he is and not worry about how tall he is? And tell us a little bit about Moody, please.
Well, I love Davion Mitchell. I've got a chance to watch him for 3 years and at Baylor, obviously covering the Big 12. He's an amazing young guy. He's a very, very good athlete. He's really built like an NFL corner. He's from Hinesville, Georgia. I don't know how high school football coaches there ever let him get off the gridiron, because he really is a great stop, start, speed athlete, great change of direction. Obviously, he's terrific defensively, especially on the ball. He really improved his outside shooting this year, and I'm a big fan, except that I think the way these mock drafts have worked, they overvalued him for much of the recency bias period after the NCAA tournament. I still think he's a top 15 pick. He would be a wonderful pick if he would have fallen to 14 for the Warriors. But I think the size of measuring out a 6'1.5", is probably going to concern some teams. And also, I don't care about this, but some people think, you know, because he's 22 years old, that, you know, how much potential, long-term potential does he have? I don't buy that. In fact, he's almost 23, which is kind of interesting. So I get it. I get why, you know, people might be shying away from him, or why he, quote unquote, is dropping. Moses Moody, on the other hand, 19 years old, 6'6", built like a linebacker, can get to the basket, good free throw shooter, potentially a really good outside shooter. And ironically enough, an Arkansas kid that I would compare him to is another Razorback, Joe Johnson. But we're talking 19 again, and you're asking him to come in on a Warrior team that has, you know, wants to be good right away. And so, you know, in his case, I think we're talking about the future more so than the present.
You keep talking about how guys are rising or falling only in mock drafts rather than in NBA team offices.
Most of the time, Ray. Most of the time. I think what happens at the end of the cycle is medicals and then the interview process when they come in. But I would say by and large, NBA teams have enough information in the 3 weeks before the draft that they pretty much don't change their board too often. But didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no. It's well, what I was going to ask is, can you rely on, let's say, a mock draft that's released today as being more representative of how teams are thinking? Or are mock drafts really not useful to you because you sort of know what teams are thinking already, and you probably know more than what most of the mock drafters are doing?
No, but I will tell you, you make a great point. When you get to about this time, this point in time, I would say that mock drafts, because of, and you know, there's a lot of them out there. Some are better than others, but there's enough intel going around the league by this time, 48 hours before the draft, that they're, I wouldn't say they're cemented in stone, but everybody has a better feel for, you know, what's going to happen. There's always going to be surprises. You know, Cam Johnson, the youngster with the Phoenix Suns, when the picks were traded, it was 6 for 11 with Minnesota, and then the Suns took Cam Johnson. Nobody had him in the top 25 because of his age, and all he's done has been a very, very good role player for the Suns, and was now kind of, I think, justifies the 11th pick. But I would say 80% of the kids going in the first round we now have a good idea of. But I also think there's always those guys that are hiding in plain sight, and then, you know, if I was working in an NBA front office, or if I was the GM, I would fire anybody who didn't lie to their friends. I think that I don't think you can really tell anybody the truth right now. If there's somebody that you love at seven, you have to kind of play your cards close to the vest.
Is there anybody who would benefit from using the absolute opposite strategy, and which is to basically be hidden in plain sight as a counter move? Or is your philosophy that always lie in all situations at this point about this subject?
Well, I think it's Machiavellian. So I would say, it's almost like, a baseball pitcher. You know, you just can't always throw fastballs. You have to throw some curves and changeups. And so absolutely, I think the gamesmanship going on right now is there are people in this league that you trust, that you can rely on, you know, solid info. There's other people that you don't want to show your cards to. But ultimately, in a case like the Warriors, they have to rely on their relationships around the league because, in this situation, you got the 7th pick and the 14th pick. So you definitely have your ear to the ground. And this is just, again, I always kind of look at the draft as a total Rubik's Cube. You have to be ready if you're at 7 to expect the unexpected. And I honestly believe good front offices have every scenario mapped out, because you have to get to where if somebody jumps up and takes the guy you want at 7 with the 4th or 5th pick, you have to be ready to shift quickly. And the thing that surprises me, guys, is there are, you know, if everybody in the league knew what they were doing from a GM standpoint, everybody would end up 41-41 every year. And so, you know, there are people who are better at wheeling and dealing in the final hours before draft, and others that aren't as good. So, you know, you have to take advantage of that.
Fran Fraschilla is our guest, and I don't know if you guys are already working on it or if I should get started on the game theory of draft lies with Fran Fraschilla and Ray Ratto. In the meantime, one prospect I at least, and I think most people, know infinitely less about than most of the other guys here, and that's Alperen Sengun out of Turkey. Yeah. He's as high as the top 10 in a lot of places. What can you tell us about someone we have not really gotten to see?
Yeah, he's just turned 19, and he's kind of the antithesis of the modern NBA big, where we're trying to get positional versatility defensively and guys that can guard away from the basket. And this kid is really the opposite. He's an old school low post player. He's as strong as an ox. He can really score inside. He's going to be able to play away from the basket someday. He reminds me of Nick Vucevic, who's been traded this year, who's, you know, basically not, that's not a bad comparison. He's a two-time All-Star, but Nick's not the prototypical NBA center. Ironically enough, guys, half the centers in the NBA were born outside of the United States if you add them all up. But here's the interesting thing about Şengün, because he's not a super athletic kid. In a league, the Turkish Basketball League, which to me is the second best domestic league in Europe, it's, you know, right behind Spain. There are 30 former NBA players in that league. Now, we're not talking all-stars, but guys that have played in the league. And at 18 years old, this kid was the MVP. So that's kind of an indicator that there's something here. If the Warriors, for example, were to take him at 7-14, what you're hoping for is a Nick Vucevic type of, you know, Euro big man who could score inside, play away from the basket, and has a very good feel for the game and a good passer. The couple of young guys that have played in Turkey this year, one of them being Kyle Wiltshire, by the way, the former Gonzaga star, that I've talked to about this kid who played against him, said he's way stronger than I realized. And we're talking about now a 19-year-old kid who's 6'10", 240. So I think that's a reason he has quote-unquote risen, because a kid like that overseas, there was less opportunity this year with COVID to go over and see him often because of all the travel restrictions.
Fran Fraschilla here on 95.7 The Game. Your knowledge of these prospects is just, it's fantastic. If he had been born in Ann Arbor, we're calling him Wagner, but Wagner is the correct pronunciation.
Wagner, very good.
Can you tell us a little bit about Wagner, and can you tell us a little bit about Book Knight as well, please?
Yeah, now Franz Wagner is obviously the younger brother of Mo Wagner, who's, you know, I think got traded two times last year, is currently a free agent. But Franz is more of a small forward type. He's really I'm not in love with him early in this draft. I don't see one NBA skill that I think is elite, but he is a jack of all trades. He does a lot of things well. I would forecast him as a top eight rotation guy someday. Very mature. He played professionally, didn't get paid. Although, you know, maybe, you know, that doesn't really matter whether you played in the NCAA or Europe, because, you know, most of these guys do get paid, and they'll get paid now with the NIL. But this kid did play professional basketball as an 18-year-old with Albert Berwyn. He just wasn't technically paid. So he's got maturity about him. I just see him as a nice role player in the league. To me, he's not the seventh pick. James Book Knight, love this kid. Love his long-term potential. He's a 6 foot, nearly 5 scoring guard. He's a late bloomer. He's a New York kid who has got a chip on his shoulder because he's one of those kids that was not on a top 100 list early in his high school career. He's been coached hard by Danny Hurley. He's not afraid of hard work, and I love his long-term potential. In the league, guys, creating your own shot is as important as making a shot sometimes, and this kid can go get his own shot. So I'm a fan of his. It would be interesting to see if somebody like the Warriors takes him at 7, because he's likely to be gone at 14, but I am a fan. I think he's going to be a good NBA player, a starting scoring guard.
We're going to let you go right after this because, well, while we'd like to keep you for another hour, I think you have better things to do. Walk us through the Olympics. Are we supposed to look at the American team as not quite up to the regular standard? Is Europe that much better? Or does COVID and sort of the compressed schedule that's been going on in basketball for the last 2 years basically make this just a crapshoot?
Well, I think the latter, Ray, for sure. The best way to put it is Nikola Jokic, who would give his left arm in a given year to play for Serbia, played 109 regular season games in 10 months. And I don't even remember if that included these playoff games, but when he begged off, or whether it was the Nuggets, his agent, himself, when he begged off, it tells you how stressful the last, you know, 15 months have been in the NBA. The fact that these guys raise their hand, Durant, Lillard, et cetera, I give those kids all the credit in the world. This is a unique situation. It's not necessarily our best team. We have very good players on that team. We still are the favorite. But what you're dealing with right now, as when it comes to particularly the U.S. versus Australia, Spain, and France, is talent versus continuity. These other teams haven't practiced for 6 weeks. They only had a two-week training camp. But when you talk about Gobert and Fournier, when you talk about Patty Mills and Joe Ingles and Dellavedova, we're talking about continuity over a decade. These guys know each other. They know the system. They know the culture. So I'm going to give the players a pass. But I will tell you, I was really disappointed. And I have never met Greg Popovich. He wouldn't know me from a hole in the wall. But I was really disappointed that he spent 2 years, quote-unquote, preparing for France. And we're out there switching at all five spots yesterday, and we've got Damon Lillard and Zach LaVine trying to guard Rudy Gobert inside. So we've got five games to figure it out. We really do. I think they're going to win the gold, but it is not going to be easy because you've got the four I mentioned. And, oh, by the way, the wild card, Slovenia, with that maniac 22-year-old who's just incredible, Doncic.
Fran Fraschilla, again, the king of international prospects. It's so good to talk to you about all the prospects coming out of college. Just one selfish question here. How do you think my man Mike Woodson's going to do in Bloomington?
You know, excellent. He's put together a great staff, Damon. I think that, first of all, he's never going to be out-coached. The coaching in the NBA is trigonometry compared to arithmetic in college, honestly. So the coaching part's going to be no issue. Juwan Howard proved that. It's always about the talent, and I think he's got a group of guys around him, a good staff that's going to get him players, and I think Mike is going to be a really good fit in Bloomington.
Fran, thank you so much for joining us. Please give our friend Kate Scott a cup of coffee the next time you see her. And I can't thank you enough for coming on today. I'll just end with a go Jaspers forever. Thank you very much.
I like it. Thank you, guys.
There he is.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.